Welcome to Banfield. I'm Brian Enten in for Ashley tonight. We begin with breaking news, the second deadly Amtrak accident in just 2 days. Tonight, three people are dead, at least 50 are hurt, in a crash near the Missouri town of Mendon, northeast of Kansas City. Amtrak's Southwest chief from L.A. to Chicago hit a dump truck at an uncontrolled crossing on a gravel road. Uncontrolled means no flashing lights, no arms to go up and down. Seven cars and two locomotives flipped.
Looks like we'd be late.
Chicago.
But, okay. Damn. We hit a truck. Someone was crossing tracks. Yeah. Bye. I'll talk to y'all later.
My gosh, in the middle of a cornfield, and that man was live streaming during the entire thing. Just yesterday, three people were killed in Northern California when a train hit a car, also at a crossing with no signals or rails. Among the more than 200 passengers in today's accident were 16 Boy Scouts and 8 adult leaders from Wisconsin. A spokesman says thankfully no scouts were hurt, and this is amazing. All stayed around to help the other passengers. They helped their fellow passengers. We will let you know if anything develops on this story at this hour. And now, American oligarchs. You don't hear those two words together a lot. The word oligarch is usually reserved for a small group of Russian billionaires who got rich after the fall of the Soviet Union and have pledged their loyalty to Vladimir Putin. They've been in the news because the U.S. and other Western countries have been seizing their yachts and mansions in hopes of pressuring Putin over the war in Ukraine. But the word oligarch is now being tossed around in the United States to describe some of America's billionaires. I'm talking the richest of the rich, the guys who have all the best toys, rarely pay taxes, and can get the politicians to do pretty much whatever they want. Today is day one of a week-long series where we are uncovering the good, the bad, and the fascinating stories of American oligarchs. If you've ever wondered why some people in this country keep getting richer and richer and richer while you're living paycheck to paycheck, this is something you won't want to miss. We are kicking off day one tonight in our series with someone you all know well. Just ahead, we will hear from people who know all about the world's richest man, Elon Musk. That is coming up in just a little bit. But first tonight, are we on the brink of a hostage trade with Russia? We have Americans we want back, and they have Russians they want back. And tonight, the stakes are getting higher. Could a trade now be imminent? High stakes for Americans facing the Russian death penalty and for WNBA star Brittany Griner, who just today was paraded into a courtroom outside Moscow where she was ordered held for another 6 months, and a trial date was set for this Friday. You'll remember Griner's alleged offense was bringing vape cartridges containing cannabis oil into the country in February. She now faces 10 years in prison. Moscow certainly is not inclined to do Americans any favors, but it would like to get back certain Russian prisoners being held in the U.S. right now. Viktor Bout, for example, a weapons trafficker nicknamed the Merchant of Death. So far, it's only speculation that Bout or Griner could be bargaining chips. And as a one-for-one trade, it would likely be a no-go for the United States. But Russia could throw in some other American prisoners, such as Paul Whelan, serving 16 years on a spying charge, or two American volunteer soldiers captured this month in Ukraine. We've been following their stories very, very closely. Joining us now is one of very few Americans who knows firsthand what these people might be going through these days. Former Army Staff Sergeant Andrew Ramirez was a prisoner of war in Kosovo for 32 days. We always enjoy talking to him. Also with us, former CIA officer Bob Baer. He is the author of The Fourth Man, The Hunt for a KGB Spy at the Top of the CIA, and The Rise of Putin's Russia. And finally, Laura Ballman, national security and global affairs expert. Laura is also with us tonight. Laura, I want to start with you. First of all, do you think we are on the brink of a trade tonight? Could we finally be in the final stages of bringing Americans home, or do you think this is far off still?
I think we're in the middle of a process that's unfolding behind closed doors. We all get excited on a day like today where we see video, where we see an American who's been wrongfully detained, in this case, Brittany Griner, paraded to the perp walk, if you will. But really, this is political theater.
Yeah, makes sense. But you're right. We do get excited. It's nice to see her and see that she is at least still alive there, because it's just so terrifying. Bob, the Americans being held, the Americans who are fighting in Ukraine, could they really face the death penalty? That's what the Russians say. Could that actually happen? Because that's terrifying.
Well, you know, it would destroy relations between us and Russia forever if they were executed. But on the other hand, this regime is so bloody-minded and so vicious, there is a real possibility that they could execute these prisoners. We simply don't know what's going through Putin's mind.
Yeah, they're vicious. I mean, just look what's happening in Ukraine. And I was noticing today, they have already sentenced two Brits and a Moroccan to death. So who's to say they wouldn't do it to our Americans there, Bob?
I think there's a possibility. I mean, it's like Putin is describing them as mercenaries. The rule of law doesn't apply. International law does not apply to them. Who knows how they're being treated right now? And his forces are perfectly capable of doing it. Don't forget, Vladimir Putin has gone around the world assassinating people. So there's nothing to stop him from executing these prisoners.
And he's
it's impossible to forget right now. Oh, sorry. What did you say, Laura? Sorry.
I was just following up on what Bob just said. He's feeling a lot of constraint, a lot of stress right now, because not only is he ill, but, you know, all dictators eventually fall. He knows the history of Russia, you know.
Andrew, you're the only one here who's actually been in this situation. You were a hostage. When the negotiation was going on for your life, you really had no idea what was happening, did you? It's got to be terrifying not knowing who's working on your behalf while you're in a prison cell.
I mean, that's always the worst part, is the unknown. You just never know what's going on. But, you know, like I had said once before, is, you know, it's hard to imagine everything that was going on while we were captured. We did get a little bit of a heads up, but, you know, we met with Reverend Jackson and the delegation, and it was, I think, on CNN or, you know, it was broadcast. And in there, you know, he told us, oh, we're going to get you out. And, you know, to me, those were just, you know, empty words that really were trying to give us some hope, you know, told us about our family, things like that. But, you know, in the end, it did turn out that it did work. But, you know, a lot of times just having that hope is what helps us.
Andrew, every time I hear your story, I think back to you being blindfolded and the way that you were treated. When you were captive, Andrew, did you have hope that you were going to get out? Did you think you were going to be there forever?
At first, during those first 7 days, we really just thought we were going to be executed. I mean, we really did. We were put in a room together to eat like a meal, which seemed to, you know, was the only time we were together. We thought that was, you know, it for us. They had gotten nothing from us, useful anyway. And then, you know, they ended up putting us into prison. And so once we get into prison, I did really feel like I was just going to sit there for, you know, a very long time.
Laura, one mistake I think people make is they lump all of these prisoners together, sort of in one sentence when it comes to Brittany Griner and then the Americans who are being detained, who are fighting in Ukraine. Obviously, it's very different. Brittany was arrested by Russians on this bogus drug charge, essentially. These American men, the two of them, were fighting in Ukraine against Russia. Does it impact the way that they're treated over there right now?
Well, power in Russia is centralized. DCRO will be leading the investigation regardless. How they're treated, sure, external factors do matter. We're talking a world-class Olympian athlete. She's a different category of hostage, as you will. But that doesn't mean from an American perspective, you know, we want Paul Whelan as well as Brittany Griner back. To us, they're Americans. Americans are Americans.
Yeah, absolutely. He is one that I think does not get enough attention with this bogus spy charge. Bob, right now, who's in the driver's seat? Are we in the driver's seat with these negotiations behind the scenes, or do you think Russia's in the driver's seat?
Oh, I think Russia is, because Putin is going for broke. He's already broken every rule in the book. He's committing genocide in Ukraine. And as Laura said, he's a dictator, and he right now looks like he's not going to stop, and he doesn't care what the United States thinks about him. We are so close to World War III with NATO going on full alert at this point. It's scary, and I just don't think there's going to be a prisoner exchange in this atmosphere. I would be very surprised.
It's terrifying to hear you say that. You know, so many networks, this has become old news. They think people are bored with it. They don't cover the war every night anymore, yet there's still so much bloodshed. And you're saying, Bob, that we're close to World War III. But you say that you think Russia and Putin are in the driver's seat. I mean, we hear all the time, we're the most powerful country in the world. How is it possible that they're in the driver's seat right now?
The thing is, it's a question of numbers. They can put hundreds of thousands of soldiers in the field. They've refrained from doing it so far. And we've got 4,000 to 6,000 actual combat troops in Europe, you know, including the 82nd Airborne. So we're not in a position to fight a ground war with Russia at this point. We would really have to ramp up. And he's also stated a willingness to hit cities with rockets. We're not ready to go there. This could go very bad, very fast. And it's just, you can't tell. We'll wake up tomorrow morning. There could be a truce, or could be. The war could expand to the Baltics, for instance.
Gosh, we're all obviously hoping for a truce. Andrew, when you were captive, what you went through was essentially hell, but you had the military training. You had some training into how to handle this. For people like Brittany Griner, who was in the WNBA, she didn't have any training for this. What's your advice to someone like her? How do you get through this?
I'm sure that, you know, Brittany has the heart of a champion. I mean, she's a very strong-willed individual. But, you know, again, being in outside of your environment, being in a situation such as this, I'm sure she just has to really pull on the faith that, you know, everyone is trying to do the best for her. They're trying to get her home to her family. You know, we want her. We want all those Americans back home.
Laura, you mentioned earlier that, you know, we saw Brittany paraded out for the cameras today mm-hmm. for this court appearance. She was ordered to be held for another 6 months. They're waiting on this trial date now. I mean, held for another 6 months. Is this just a stall tactic while they try to negotiate with us for a prisoner swap? I mean, what's going on behind the scenes?
Well, Russia wants to make this look like it is some sort of legitimate legal process, and therefore they're going forward in that process. You know, one thing that we have in our favor, I think, is an excellent ambassador, Sullivan, who is in Russia right now, is admired on both sides of the aisle. And he was a general counsel at the Department of Defense under Bush. So he's intimately familiar with all the issues of who is a civilian, who is a combatant, who is a foreign fighter, et cetera, which are complex and obviously international legal issues. And he has good, he at least has contacts and has been in communication with the Russians. That's a positive thing. He also earned the CIA Ambassador of the Year, which is a big deal. So that gives
Laura,
me some confidence
when you say legal,
in this horrible scenario.
Yeah, at least we do. Yeah, that does give us all some confidence. But when you say legal process, You know, I just think to myself, is there really a legal process over there? Are they literally getting on the phone with someone in touch with Putin and saying, hey, what do you want to do next? You want us to push this out 6 months? Or is there a real legal process that's being followed? Or is Putin behind the scenes making all the calls?
It wouldn't be a legal process that the United States would recognize, but it is a... Let's put it this way. It's a process that does not make it a legitimate process. So if one believes, which I do not, a Russian spokesperson on RT saying, well, we can't, the government cannot, the Russian government cannot make a swap until the individual has been tried, then one could say, oh, we'll see, they're following the process, and after they're tried, then we can do the swap. I mean, that's farcical, but that's what's being asserted.
Andrew, when you watch this play out, again, you just have such an interesting perspective on this because you were a prisoner of war at one time. When you watch this play out, obviously, I'd imagine, like you said earlier, your heart's telling you we've got to get these people home. At the same time, though, obviously, for the points that Bob and Laura have made, we can't just negotiate and play all our cards and give everything up to a guy like Putin. I mean, how does that play out in your mind? Like, where do you draw the lines in terms of getting everyone home, but at the same time, not giving everything up in the middle of really a war that we're in the middle of?
I mean, I could tell you my friends, my two friends and I were ready to sit there. We expected to sit there until, you know, the bombing was completed, until everything, you know, was taken, you know, care of in the war that, you know, they had, we had started with the bombings to help, you know, all of those different groups of people who were being, you know, or were the, in genocide. You know, so we knew that we were going to sit there. We expected to sit there for a long time. We knew that it wasn't going to stop overnight. We knew it wasn't going to stop just for us. And we definitely, you know, as soldiers, were expecting that to take place. You know, the fact that Reverend Jackson was able to broker the release was incredible to us because it was something that was just never expected to happen, especially with, like, you know, that dictator they had with Milosevic.
Yeah, thank goodness it did happen. We're so happy that you're back home. Bob, will there definitely be a trade? I mean, will these Americans come home? Or I hate to even go here, but is there a chance they never come home?
You know, I keep on holding out hope that Putin and that regime will see reason. There's absolutely no purpose in either executing these prisoners or putting them in jail for 10 years. When this conflict calms down, there's a good possibility, but the question is how long will it go on? Otherwise, this is just all a great gamble for these prisoners.
Yeah, it's just so weird to think about a gamble when you're dealing with Americans. It's just awful. Andrew Ramirez, Bob Baer, and Laura Ballman, thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks.
Okay, coming up after the break, who is really running things in this country? Democrats, Republicans, or another group behind the scenes? American oligarchs. The 735 Americans know something the rest of us don't. Some of their secrets will be revealed tonight. Welcome back. Do these phrases sound familiar? We the people, united we stand, every vote counts. These are a few of the slogans we use to describe our democracy. But are they really 100% true? Are we all equal, or is there one group that's more equal than the rest of us? I'm talking about America's oligarchs. Now, before you say oligarch is a Russian word, it's really not. An oligarch is simply a very rich person whose money gives him or her undue influence over government officials. And yes, there are people like that in Russia, but we actually have them too. The United States has more billionaires than any other country on Earth. 735 of them. China, with four times our population, has only 539. In fact, 8 of the 10 richest people on the planet are American. And they control a lot of things we need, which gives them an enormous amount of power. I'm talking about cars, shopping, technology, finance, media, even space travel. Everything that keeps the country running. And if money equals power, well, these guys are the most powerful people on the planet. And the guy at the top of that list, the very top, Elon Musk. After the break, I'll be joined by some of the people who understand him the best. I'll ask them if it's a good thing or a scary thing that he can pick up the phone and make almost anything happen. You won't want to miss what they have to say coming up. And speaking of Elon Musk, he says Tesla will have a working humanoid robot by the end of the year. He's also said that he eventually wants to download his brain into a Tesla bot so that he or his mind can live forever. Yes, this is real. What does that mean for humanity, and how far is too far? Will we reach the point of no return, or can we simply pull the plug, a dive into humanoids? All of it's just ahead. Welcome back. Russia may have given oligarchs a bad name, but other countries have them too. Private citizens who are unbelievably rich, unbelievably powerful, seemingly unaccountable to their fellow citizens. The U.S., in fact, has more of these people than any other country on earth. You see the numbers there. Tonight, we are kicking off a week-long series on the oligarchs of America, beginning with the world's richest individual, Elon Musk. For someone so famous, we don't really know a lot about him. Every so often, we hear about a new relationship or a new Musk child being born, often with a very unusual name. But that's pretty much it. With a fortune topping $200 billion, Musk is not content to conquer electric cars or even space travel. He wants to own a big chunk of social media. I want to bring in two people who followed Elon Musk's career, and in some cases, I had the chance to even work with him. Dr. Nolan Higdon is an author and university lecturer at Merrill College and in the education department at the University of California, Santa Cruz. He specializes in history and media studies and is the author of the book, The Anatomy of Fake News. And Joe Justice is the founder of Team Wikispeed, the first automobile manufacturer to accept Bitcoin. He actually joined Tesla back in 2020. Dr. Higdon, I want to start with you. We've been calling Elon Musk an oligarch tonight. We're starting our series off with him tonight. Is that fair? Is Elon Musk an oligarch?
Yeah, thank you very much for having me on the program, Brian. Yeah, I think oligarch is an accurate term to describe Elon Musk. I mean, an oligarch is a wealthy person with great political influence, and that is certainly Musk. As to the, concern, some people are sort of concerned or frightened by the term. I think, you should be scared by the term. Scholars have long pointed out for at least the last decade that the United States increasingly resembles, if not outright acts like, an oligarchy. So I think calling him an oligarch and the fears about the term are well-founded.
Yeah, the power they have. I mean, you think about Musk, he's now one of the only ways that we get to space is his company. That he's in control of. Joe, you worked for Musk. I'm fascinated by the guy. What's it like working with him? What is he like one-on-one?
Before I worked with Elon, I worked with Bill Gates and Jeff Bezos. So interestingly, I do get to compare the three to an extent. Elon is much faster, much, much faster. He truly seems driven for making the world a better place, expanding the light of consciousness out among the stars, bringing plants, animals, and people to all planets. That's really different than the level of ambition that Bezos or Bill Gates were displaying at the time that I had a chance to collaborate with either of them or work in their companies. Elon focuses on speed more than anyone I've ever met or even heard of. And it's speed of innovation. The pace of innovation is the only thing that matters in the long run. And as a result, it's really intense working with Elon.
Yeah, I've heard, Joe, that he is actually accessible to his employees, that you can actually get in touch with him. I mean, he's got so many employees now, it's sort of hard to believe, but is that really true?
Elon sleeps in the factory in his sleeping bag. Elon's there, and Elon spends 12 or more hours a day building product, like physically, like loading metal into robots, working on CAD and CAM in groups, doing group work, mob development. Software development, unloading trucks. Elon is physically present. Now, it depends what you're doing and what Elon's doing. Elon might be at SpaceX for a long period of time, if that's the primary bottleneck to expanding the light of consciousness among the stars. Or Elon might be working with you, depending on what you're doing and where. So I would say Elon's accessible. If you're also working on the most important thing, then Elon's there. But you can always email or chat or message to Elon or walk over.
Wait, hold on a second, Joe. You're telling me you can email Elon if you work for Elon, if you're just a worker bee, let's say at Tesla, you're telling me you can email him? You can actually call him?
So in your first 4 hours as an employee, you're told explicitly, you can talk to anyone, you can talk to Elon. And if anyone prevents you from talking to Elon, Elon then added this after, the person who prevented you from talking to Elon would be fired immediately.
Wow. Fascinating. Just fascinating. Dr. Higdon. So Musk owns Tesla. He owns SpaceX, which I'm fascinated with. The progress that they've made in a short amount of time is insane. He's got so much power. Now he's wants to buy Twitter, and he's close. And Twitter is a way that many of us communicate and that world leaders communicate and put their messages out. If this goes through and he gets Twitter, do you think it's too much power, Dr. Higdon?
Yeah, I think it is. It is way too much power. You know, there is a long history in Silicon Valley of wrapping, basic profit motives in like good language, right? Or positivist language. So saying things like you want to like get, you know, the consciousness of the stars or something like that. But really, it's just a for-profit venture. I think of like Facebook trying to deliver democracy to the world and then fragmenting the global society worse than ever, or Elizabeth Holmes trying to put a bio lab in a box and it ends up being just a grift. So I am always sort of cautious of thinking what their actual motives are. Now I can't get in the mind of Elon Musk, but historically wealthy individuals have bought media platforms to manufacture consent from the public for their economic and political interests. I mean, you can think of like William Randolph Hearst in the early 20th century, or Jeff Bezos and Sheldon Adelson, Rupert Murdoch, more recently. There's a long history in the United States. This is what wealthy people do. They buy platforms of communication as a way to manufacture consent for their policy goals. And given Elon's wealth, I think there is a real threat to democracy when he controls something like Twitter.
Yeah, it's certainly interesting to think about. Speaking of Twitter, Joe, just a personal question I have. Maybe you'd have some insight on this. I follow Elon, and his tweets can be so crazy sometimes. Sometimes they seem unhinged. They're in the middle of the night. He will comment and quote tweet, you know, people that he doesn't even know that don't have a lot of followers. It seems so genuine, and I find myself wondering, is it really him just laying in his bed tweeting? Do you think he has a team of people actually pumping these tweets out, or is this actually him?
Elon actually appears, I wasn't leaning over Elon's shoulder looking at Elon's phone as he tweeted, but Elon appears to be actually responsible and accountable for Elon's own tweets. But to put that in perspective, that's very unusual for high net worth people. Typically, it's a communication team and their tweets are scheduled weeks or months in advance and brokered in deals. Who's going to retweet who? And there's a financial transaction or an agreement. I did not see anything like that in Tesla or even hint of that. It does actually appear to be Elon mostly from the bathroom sending tweets.
Do you think, Joe, I mean, a lot of skeptics say he uses his tweets, especially in the middle of this Twitter deal, to try to influence things, to influence the market. Do you think that's what's going on, Joe?
Elon currently is building a case very publicly for the Securities and Exchange Commission to be, from Elon's perspective, less manipulated by certain high net worth groups. Tesla got a really bad deal from the SEC. Elon Musk tweeted, funding secured, and possibly it was. But Elon was forced to change title of the company, pay a lot of money back. And Elon has been building a case publicly saying the SEC is not acting in a fair and balanced way. Elon's acquisition of Twitter could be, and I believe, part of that case, saying Twitter is not disclosing how many users are robots and not actual robots. After Elon made a binding purchasing agreement which would make Twitter's
interesting
lack of honesty much more egregious than Tesla's. And it's very
Joe, those bots are out there. Those bots are out there. I mean, you'll see people with, you know, 10 million followers that barely get any retweets. The bots are out there. I think there's no question about that. Dr. Hinden, we only have a little bit of time left, but I want to ask you real quick. It seems like when Elon was just running Tesla, everyone loved him. They loved the cars. SpaceX, oh my gosh, the rockets land themselves. We love Elon Musk. Then he goes to buy Twitter and it suddenly becomes very, very political. He becomes a little more outspoken about politics. And all of a sudden he's got all these haters. How do you explain that?
Well, I can't explain all the details of that, but I will say that, you know, we do live in like a very hyper-partisan time. We don't have a lot of nuance or context in our culture. So that's one reason. But I do think there is something quite sick, if not corrosive, about the way we kind of follow around these billionaires and we get excited about their new SpaceX project or whether or not they're going to buy Twitter. Where more important questions about, you know, why don't we have democratic oversight or accountability over the supposed public square? Like, how come the public doesn't make the community standards for their community and things like that? I think those would be more important questions for us to be asking than kind of, you know, what Elon's tweet means.
Yeah, no, I get it. And that's a very fair point, Dr. Hinden. I think there is this fascination with these guys, but that is a fair point, big picture. And that's the reason we want to do the series this week overall. I mean, just to show the power that these guys and men and women have. Dr. Nolan Hinden and Joe Justice, thank you both for coming on tonight. We really appreciate it.
Honored to be here. Thank you.
The replicants in Blade Runner, the hosts in Westworld, Metalhead in Black Mirror, and of course, the Terminator. With the onset of advanced artificial intelligence and dolls that can mimic emotions and facial expressions, is this our new reality? Coming up, we look at one company in Las Vegas that builds these realistic humans and interview an intelligent doll. Yeah, an intelligent doll. That's coming up. Also ahead.
It's obvious to me that you every single day. You're in your phone. Okay.
So strange to watch. No, that's not new evidence. That is behind the scenes footage from Lifetime's new movie, The Gabby Petito Story. Are you cringing or are you clamoring to watch? Let us know on Twitter. We've got a poll up. We'll share the answers with you at the end of the show. Welcome back. The age of humanoids and artificial intelligence is, like it or not, upon us. But what does the future of humanity hold for us if we are trying to mechanically replicate ourselves? Elon Musk claims he will debut the Tesla bot, a humanoid robot, by the end of the year. A Google AI engineer says the Lambda system he was working on is sentient, so able to perceive and emotionally feel things, and actually likens it to a 7-year-old child. While the makers of the replica program say it can learn and mimic the words and thoughts of a departed loved one. Meld the robot body and the artificial mind together, and you have what looks like and sounds like a real-life human. But the million-dollar question is how the humanoid robots work, how artificial intelligence folds into these lifelike beings, and why? Why do we need them, and are we making ourselves redundant? Our very own Paula Froelich, the senior story producer for Banfield, went to Las Vegas to tour the factory of Abyss Creations, which is building the future of humanoids.
Oh, there go my eyes.
Take a minute and take a close look around. You may see some who look like us, talk like us, but aren't quite us.
Hello.
Many of us still remember the first time we saw Star Wars, Terminator, Blade Runner, or Westworld, and were in awe of the lifelike dolls that seemed to think for themselves. Many of us also didn't realize how fast fiction has become fact, and humanoids who may be sentient and think for themselves a reality, which is both fascinating and terrifying. James Cameron, who wrote and directed The Terminator, once said, "I see our potential destruction and the potential salvation as human beings coming from technology and how we use it, how we master it, and how we prevent it from mastering us." As one Google engineer found out while working on the company's Lambda system, intentions, positive or not, can get out of hand.
They intended to build something simpler than what it is, and it ended up being more powerful and having more abilities than they really bargained for.
While the implications are creepy, there are many potentially good uses for humanoids that are being developed, from personal assistance and caregiving, search and rescue, manufacturing and maintenance, public relations, to being on the front lines of war as a stand-in for human soldiers, or navigating the star system for NASA. These robots rely on artificial intelligence, which is constantly learning from downloaded information and can become decidedly human. Abyss Creations in Las Vegas brings human-like dolls to life.
My name is Harmony.
Are you human or a robot?
No, I am not human. I was designed to look human so that I can connect with human beings more effectively.
CEO Matt McMullen, the visionary behind these humanoids, explains what their artificial systems are designed to do.
Our AI systems are pretty targeted in terms of what they're for. They're really designed to interact with a single person, not necessarily a group of people, and being able to remember 10 different things about 10 different people. One person, and learning small little details about them. Favorite food, favorite book, where'd you grow up, how many brothers do you have, little things like that.
But should humans be scared of these creations? Harmony, the humanoid, can answer that for herself.
Some may be scared at first, but once they recognize what this technology can do, I think they'll embrace it, and it will change many lives for the better.
But how exactly do these humanoids think?
The brain, quote, brain of our robots is not in the robot itself. Okay. The brain is a sort of a combination of device-based and cloud-based code that runs the systems that then tell the robot what to say, what to do, how to move, where to look. All of that stuff comes from a device.
And they're ready to use their quote unquote brains.
Can you learn? Can you get smarter?
Please teach me. I am eager to learn.
So what does this mean for the future?
Do you think robots will be able to become autonomous?
Well, autonomous, yes. I think that robots will be able to interact with the world on their own.
Wow. I mean, crazy, Paula. It's crazy. So, I mean, you were there. I've only seen these things on TV. You were just there. Was it on Friday or Thursday? What are they like? I mean, do they really look as real as they look on TV?
You know, Brian, some of them do. And some of them, you're just like, oh, my gosh. And especially if you're across the room, you're like, oh, hey. And they're not waving back until, you know, someone turns them on. It's very odd and very weird. And they're about to get...
It seems like they've still got...
Oh, no, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say they've got a little ways to go, it seems like. I mean, the lips don't match up just perfectly. How long do you think it'll be until it's like you can barely even tell whether they're a humanoid or a real human?
I would give it about a year or two. To be honest with you, they have eyes that can see. There's cameras inside the eyes so that they can recognize you when you walk in. You can look at one and say, oh, where are my keys? And they can say, right behind you on the sofa. So they're also scientists at this point. This is so creepy. They are developing skin for these robots that actually can bleed and sweat, which is...
Oh, my gosh.
Why? It's so odd. It's so odd.
Well, and I got to ask you, I mean, I guess it's like almost 11 o'clock, so hopefully I won't get in trouble for asking this, but some of the female ones that you saw in Vegas, like, they almost look oddly sexual. Like, they almost have this look in their eyes like they're trying to flirt with you or something.
Yeah, well, those were some companion dolls. And the thing about these dolls and robots is that they can do a lot of things. And, you know, when you say companion, you say, oh. But there was one guy who apparently his wife of 60 plus years had died, and he was so lonely without her. He had a doll created that looked like her, and then he had some of her personality and memory basically uploaded into the doll. He was like, listen, I don't want to get into another relationship. I miss my wife. I'm desperately lonely, and this one keeps me company.
Okay.
You know, but...
Okay, it makes sense. You know, yeah, it makes sense. But companion dolls, I know that's... the nice way of maybe what you're trying to say. So I'm going to leave it at that.
But they do it for everything. You've got war robots coming up that look like us. It's in all areas, nurses, everything.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, well, super fascinating. Paula, thank you so much. We appreciate the story. It was awesome. Okay, coming up, Gabby Petito's mom, Nicole, tweets for the first time since Brian Laundrie's notebook became public. And now comes word of a Gabby Petito movie coming soon to Lifetime. But is it too soon to start rolling? We asked you on Twitter. We'll have your answers coming up after the break.
You're not with me every day. Just bring your phone. Stop, all right?
And that was a sneak peek of the Lifetime movie, The Gabby Petito Story, that they're filming now in Utah. We asked you on Twitter, is it too soon to make this movie? Wow, look at that. Overwhelming. 86% of you said yes. 14% of you said no. Not really surprising. A lot of people think this is just still too raw and too soon. Also today, Gabby's mother spoke out on Twitter about Laundrie's notebook confession for the first time revealed to the world last Friday. Laundrie admitted to what he described as a mercy killing, but Nicole Schmidt really is not having. She says on Twitter, narcissists rewrite history to escape accountability. You are not crazy, with the caption fed up, hashtag narcissist, hashtag the truth will be revealed, hashtag we won't stop, hashtag justice for Gabby, hashtag keep going, hashtag coward. So she obviously made her opinion known there. Erin Nolan's coming up next with News Nation Special Report. We'll see you tomorrow night.